Ladies and gentlemen, early Sunday morning podcast. I'm back. Zach is over there. I might snap it. I might throw it to him. Might be a little offset. He might throw it longer. Doug running deep. Unstoppable. I like to play a design. Gentlemen, two quarterbacks. Scott Roussel, Zach Barnett, Doug Samuels, John Bryce flying back from Hawaii. We'll see. Maybe he calls in. Maybe he doesn't. I hope he gets some sleep. Anyway, yesterday was what some people said, slate. Nah, we knew it was ham. It was ham. A couple of you guys called the upsets. Why don't we start the one we did not call, Penn State, UCLA, the Jerry Show, all the love for Jerry Neuheisel. Rick watching it was fun. All of America getting to see that was something. If you're Jim Knowles, if you're James Franklin, I have no words. Zach, you got anything on that one?
Isn't this why we love college football? That you have the highest paid defensive coordinator in the sport getting absolutely roasted by a 33-year-old that was not an offensive coordinator 1 week ago. Like,
he's calling with his mic up here and no one can hear him. And the quarterback's like, oh, I'm being it. We're good.
And then on the other sideline, you've got the highest paid defensive coordinator in the sport. Like, you, no one would have predicted this, but yet it happened. UCLA scored 57 points in their first four games and then scored 42 on Penn State. We'll just call him Nico, was getting Vince Young comparisons during the game. And going into Saturday, the only way that those two would have been compared is that, yeah, they both would not be playing football 2 years from now. And now it's like you had an entirely different program. And I'm watching that game thinking, well, you know, all these different reasons why football can't succeed at UCLA. The stadium's too far away. Well, the stadium's far away, and it wasn't full, but the fans that were there were into it. They were losing their minds. And all that stuff didn't seem to stop them from beating Penn State when you had the right people in the boat, a competent head coach, the right offensive coordinator. Suddenly you can go out and beat the number seven team in the country. It was
number remarkable. A couple weeks ago, yeah, 2 weeks
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, remarkable, incredible. I felt you can't help but feel great for everyone at UCLA, especially Jerry Neuheisel, who's, I assume, one of the few who lives and dies for UCLA football. Mm-hmm. So that was great. I have no idea what this means moving forward for either program, but it was absolutely awesome to see.
I know what it should mean. I tweeted something over the weekend that like everyone back in their playground days had an all-time quarterback. Jerry Neuheisel just needs to be the all-time OC at UCLA forever now. Like I loved it. I love that Rick Neuheisel, they had cameras on him and in studio watching his son succeed, and that feeling was really, really cool. Credit to CBS that had the cameras on him, because if he was just at home watching it and his wife was at the game, or they're both at the game, like that's such a cool moment for college football to kind of revel in.
Amen. After the game, I was trying to think through what UCLA fan feels, because it's pretty clear in the 48 hours leading up to the game, UCLA fan is disgusted with Martin Jarman and UCLA athletics and how they bungled NIL, and there's no cohesion, there's no strategy. And then you come in and I've known Tim Skipper probably 15 years. And I love the guy. I think I'm one of the only guys who sings his accolades. The dude is just a consistent ball coach, good man, leader, servant leader. So Tim Skipper's in place. Neuheisel comes in, wows. If you're a UCLA fan, you're like, do I like this or do I not like this? It's kind of awkward because you know they don't want to go from Deshaun to Tim Skipper, who's a good football coach, but UCLA wants some jazz, some pizzazz. I don't know. I think UCLA fan is perplexed.
I'm with you. I think, I mean, we're still not even halfway into the season. I think if you're UCLA, you let it play out. And if this team comes together and somehow rips off 7 wins in a row, then the results are the results at that point. The odds are probably against that. And for all of the, you know, there was so much discourse about Penn State of they can't win the big one, but they win all the small ones. And it seems like coaches and players bought into that a little bit. Like, we're Penn State, they're UCLA, we'll go out there and win, yada, yada, yada. And obviously they did not, they were not prepared for the UCLA. They might have been prepared for the UCLA that was on tape. They weren't prepared to play the UCLA that was in front of them at the Rose Bowl on Saturday.
I think the good news for UCLA fans is that Martin Jarman doesn't deserve a pat on the back for this decision. Like, he's still on the hook for the NIL bungles and where the program is. But the good news for UCLA fans is that they have a talented roster, and for whatever reason, all that clicked on Saturday, right? They've got a good roster. They've got talent. They've got talent there. For whatever reason, they just played more free. They didn't feel restricted. They just went out there and executed and have fun and kind of got back to some backyard football and played for people that they care about. So that's the good news for UCLA fans. And Martin Jarman does not deserve a pat on the back by any stretch of the imagination for this. This is Tim Skipper and Jerry Neuheisel and a talented roster that went out and won that game.
The other question that I've seen floating around this morning is this the beginning of the end of James Franklin at Penn State? Not that they're going to fire him, but that it might be best for both parties to go their separate ways.
The thing that bothered me the most after the game is I asked, you know, what happened? And he's blaming, you know, how they handled the Trav and all that. Well, that's part of your job, like, is to figure out how to do that. You weren't surprised going to UCLA. They've been a member of the Big Ten Conference for a couple of years now. Like, none of this was a surprise. So to have that come up in his answer for why they lost is like that. That's the frustrating part to Penn State fans.
And it's not like they played at 10 o'clock Eastern. It was a 3:30 Eastern time kick.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. You go out and you're like, we're going to get Jim Knowles. We're going to pay a lot, right? $3 million, get Jim Knowles. And I don't know, UCLA's in Los Angeles, Pasadena. That happens, that team, you're just like, golly. And I mean, UCLA was inept on offense against everybody else they played. God, James looking at the scoreboard like, how did we get here? I don't have any answers for you, Zach.
And then I'm by no means excusing Jim Knowles' performance, but it was also underwhelming by Andy Kolnicki in the offense. Like, Drew Aller threw for 200 on 26 attempts. Arguably the best running back room in college football, didn't even get 100 yards against a defense that New Mexico absolutely eviscerated, a long of 13 yards from Allen and Singleton. That's not good enough. You scored 35. You should have scored 50.
This was not a big game, but we say this all the time. In big games, I'm picking against Penn State until James Franklin proves me wrong. And this wasn't a big game, though. That's
– yeah. And – you're, of course, even less confident that they're going to go on the road at Ohio State. They've got Indiana at home. This is a team that was a number two preseason that's probably now going to miss the college football playoff. And isn't that unthinkable? I can't imagine saying that about a preseason top two team.
Well, transitioning to Texas. Yeah, I mean, you've been telling us Florida was going to get one. And you've been saying, like, I'm just telling y'all, Napier always – he rises up. And there it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I picked him to beat Miami, and I picked him to beat the wrong top 10 team. This was the performance that we all knew Florida had in them. Yeah, and this was the team that, frustrating if you're a Florida fan, Obviously, you didn't have Dallas Wilson, who's a difference maker. But if you'd beaten South, found a way to not gag that game away against South Florida, really, you'd be in the thick of everything. You lost at Miami, but South Florida loss, yeah, derailed your season in a way. But this is the team Florida should have had all season long. This is a team that, you know, can compete with anybody on a given day. And this is not the team Texas expected to have. The offensive line is – I struggle to think of a worse one in the SEC. It's terrible and severely limiting everything that you think you could do moving forward offensively and defensively. You got your starting running back, Quatrevion Weister, who really shouldn't be your starting running back but is. He ran the ball 8 times for 11 yards with a long of 6. So his other 7 carries went for 5 yards. And he ran for 80 against Ohio State. So it was just non-existent. So a lot of heat's falling on Arch, and he's clearly not the Heisman candidate everyone thought he'd be out of the box. But the good and bad news is he's not the biggest problem for this offense. I think play calling does not reflect what this team is offensively, and the defense was a major disappointment yesterday. You got pushed around in a way that you shouldn't have gotten pushed around. And even as bad as the offense is, if you told them they'd score 21 points in this game, like, all right, it's probably a win. We have a top 2 defense in this in the country, and you probably don't. And so if your defense is just good and not great and your offensive line is atrocious, your special teams failed in big moments, you're going to be a team that's going to be fighting to get to 8 wins.
Sark was asked after the game whether it was running back issues or offensive line issues, and he kind of waffled back and forth about which one it is. Well, if your quarterback isn't playing the way he's expected to play, your run game has really struggled, and Zach just lamented on, you know, the leading rusher having leading running back rusher having 11 yards. Arch was the leading rusher with like 32 or 37 yards. That's your answer right there. Your offensive line is the issue. That is the glaring issue. And then on the flip side, Florida got DJ Lagway cooking a little bit, went like 21 or 28 for almost 300 yards. Like, he finally found his stride, and it's become an annual tradition in college football that Billy Napier gets off the hot seat proverbially with one of these games. And that it's
– Yeah, the big – oh, go ahead.
No, that's it.
The big question for Texas moving forward is if you get pantsed at the Cotton Bowl on Saturday, suddenly you're 3-3, and your goals are completely out the window at that point. And then the question becomes: do you have the right people in the right places? Do the coaches even know what they're looking at? Like, they lost 4 starters from the offensive line and didn't take a offensive line transfer. And so it's like, did you not see what you had with his offensive line and not try and go get a transfer? The running back room is just full of average players.
Texas.
Yeah. They don't look strong at the point of attack. Do you need to go hire an offensive coordinator? You know, you're talking about making major, major uncomfortable changes if this season continues on the path that it is. And I don't see how it isn't, because you're not improving this offensive line in 6 days.
Thursday, we did our preview. I said I thought Kwiatkowski's defense would hold Florida 17 or less. And I thought that was a difference in the game, and I was wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Florida's ability to get 6 yards on runs that were probably blocked for 2 or 3,
right,
and Texas's ability to get 0 yards on runs that were blocked for 1, that was really the game.
I was watching in multi-view, which is just a tremendous product, and I had the sound on another game most of the game, and I'm kind of watching Texas. Well, I kind of flip over to Texas to the sound on the last drive, and I was disappointed in the broadcast. 2 out of like the last 3 or the last 4 plays, those last 3 plays, I think, whoever the broadcast unit was, they're like, Arch has a guy down the middle. He's splitting the safeties twice. They're like, he's got a guy right down the middle. You got to hit him. And they never show any video of it. You have no idea if that's true. If this dude's just making that up, I have no idea. And then it was like first down and third down. Arch takes these anyway. And like, he's got a guy down the middle. You got to rip it. And you're like, why isn't he ripping it? Is he really open? Like, what? Like, could you show us that, please? Anyway.
Yeah, it's not often you find yourself asking that question within an ESPN broadcast. Usually they're the best in the business.
They got angles upon angles upon angles of it.
Yeah. And it was a running clock situation, a little tight, but anyway, it would have been nice to have seen. All right. There was other football, believe it or not. Ohio State handled business, hence Zach gets to keep writing with his shorts on, which we appreciate. Miami looked really good. Like, really good. Shannon Dawson is a dude. I love Mark. Just watching Mario on the sidelines makes me laugh. I don't know. Brings me joy. That's it. That's my entire commentary there. Zach, you said you wanted to see the quarterback play at Oklahoma. Did okay, huh?
Yeah, did enough. Not enough. It's Kent State.
I know.
So he emerged healthy. I love that Miami. Miami's so fun to watch, just because when Miami is really good, the swag of the U comes out, and you know that they absolutely cherish going into Dope Campbell and going babysitting mode and tucking the kids into bed before bedtime. And they allowed Castellanos to – I don't want to say they forced two Castellanos interceptions, and it seemed more like they allowed him to throw them two interceptions, because, mm-hmm. When it gets muddy out there, he just kind of throws up YOLO balls, and sometimes they go to the right team, sometimes they go to the wrong team. And Shannon Dawson seems supremely confident in his personnel offensively. And they're not in a hurry to get to where they're going, but they know eventually they're going to get there with a ninth year starting quarterback in Carson Beck. This is a team that to me looks like it's going to be a Final Four team, not just a playoff team, but a team that actually gets the playoff and wins games. And I want to shout out Alex Mirabal, the Miami's offensive line coach. He's one of the best in the business. He's probably, if you saw him on the street, the last job you would ever expect that he has is major college football offensive line coach. But yeah, he's one of the best in the business. And I saw him on TV and I was just reminded of how much I love that dude and watching his product.
Miami may be the best in the country at taking turnovers and turning them into points. They did it for three quarters. They kind of got blank there in the fourth quarter. But I know Zach had an article about money downs earlier in the week. Like, we need a stat for turning turnovers into points, because that has really separated Miami at the early point of the season.
Also had it on. I had sound on a different game. Watching this play, Miami, they had a motion penalty, so it got called back. But they threw this little short ball left to 10. 10 catches it amongst a bunch of dudes, and he stiff arms a dude, knocks another dude, jokes a dude, breaks out and goes like 60 yards for a touchdown, and had to skip by two more guys along the way. I was like, that was one of the best runs I've ever seen. He got called back. But look at that. Miami's got some dudes. I'm not kidding you.
And then also for Florida State now, it seems like that week one upset was, oh, is Florida State suddenly better than Alabama? It seems like we know now with a month of hindsight, the answer is no. They just caught them on the wrong day. And now Florida State's 0-2 in conference play and fighting a severe uphill battle to accomplish real meaningful things this season.
Been a long time since they won an ACC game, which is just a fascinatingly weird statement. A couple other ones I want to touch on real fast. I've never seen a surrender like what Luke Fickell did with 2:35 to play. Second and six, they're down 14. Second and six, like midfield, Michigan's got the ball. He's got a couple of timeouts. If he stops him on second, calls a timeout. If he stops him on third, calls a timeout. Michigan has to punt. They used to get the ball before the two-minute warning. You got a shot. Fickell just lets the clock run to 2 minutes. They run a third. They run a second down play. He lets it run down to like a minute 20. You're like, you're just not going to call him at all. And then they got the third down. They converted on third, so the game was over. But you're like.
Seems like everyone at Wisconsin is playing out the string right now.
Fickell was just accepting it's over.
I've never, the never odd thing is, The odd thing is Michigan is kind of the prototypical of what you expect a Wisconsin team to be, a future NFL running back. Obviously, Bryce Underwood's more talented than any Wisconsin quarterback, but a future NFL running back, stingy defense. We're going to try and beat you 24-10 with some play-action passing. And Wisconsin is a long, long way from being able to do that right now.
Amen. Zach, you picked Cincinnati beating Iowa State. Tell me where your confidence in that one came from.
My confidence came from the fact that I think we had to retroactively downgrade the Iowa State wins over Iowa and Kansas State. Neither one of those teams are what we hoped they would be preseason. JB's chagrin, given his bold prediction this season. And Cincinnati's playing really good football with Brendan Sorsby out of Denton, Texas, going on the road in conference play. It's just kind of this Big 12 math. You have a team, two equal teams, one's going on the road, one's a little overrated. You just know what's about to happen.
I'll close it out. I thought the Fighting Jerry Kills, led by Diego Pavia, I thought they were going to find a way to win that game outright. Alabama did a good job closing down, saying, hey, we're gonna fight this thing. Alabama's defense showed up. Good game. I think both teams left a little like, all right, I don't know. All right. Yeah, anyway.
Both teams left a little on the table. I contend that college football is so much more fun when Diego Pavia's trash talk is 1,000% backed up. So it was a little disappointing to see, you know, Theo Vaughn and Johnny Manziel on the sideline there supporting their dude, and it just didn't pan out the way that they wanted to. I saw something this morning where Diego Pavia in his pregame warmups practices his victory kneel before he heads in the locker room, which I think is that's some pretty next level stuff. But Vanderbilt's a good football team. They feel like they can shut down the run. They can run the ball. They had some really creative shovel passes. They put on a shovel pass clinic against Alabama in some creative ways. They kind of utilize their option concepts. But yeah, Diego Pavia is so much more fun when his trash talk is 1,000% backed up. And you knew it'd be a battle, but Alabama's had that one circled for a full year. They were going to come out ready.
Yeah,
Andy circled.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it pregame. Kind of the worst thing for Vanderbilt this year was that they beat them last year. Like, if you're Alabama, even though Vanderbilt's really good, they're still Vanderbilt. It still says Vanderbilt on their helmet. So. I think Alabama is, if I had to pick one team to win the SEC right now, it would be them. And so much of that stems from their quarterback. When you have a quarterback that's just in control of everything that happens out there, you're going to be really hard to beat. So for Alabama to be not so wowed by a 16-point win over a top 20 team is quite a compliment to them, in my opinion.
Gentlemen, any other games you want to mention in particular on this beautiful podcast?
I have one that I want to bring up, and I want to throw this at Scott in particular because I just want to get your opinion. So the type of college football fan that I am, and I think I'm in line with the majority, is if I'm a Texas Tech fan and we're 5-0, going to be in the top 10, go on the road, beat a conference opponent by 24 points, I'm coming away from that game not overjoyed. I'm coming away that way quietly freaking out because we settled for like 9 field goals. And my only thought is, what's wrong with our red zone offense? We have the best team we've ever had. If we can't fix this red zone offense, we're going to get upset, beat, blah, 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 blah. Do you think that's sane or insane?
I was a little surprised. I caught some of that game. I was a little surprised how they did just keep getting stopped. And having to get field goals. It's a unique situation for that team. They've spent money like they've never spent money before. They're talking about it. Joey McGuire, you know, known as a heck of a ball coach, not an offensive juggernaut at Texas Tech. Like some other teams have been. Zach, I think they're telling themselves publicly, just win, baby. But they're like, it sure would be nice if we could punch them in. I hear you. Also, from the Houston Oiler days of the blue, the powder blue, that's fun. Watching University of Houston in that, I'm like,
yeah.
No, it just hurt my eyes a little bit. I don't know. It just felt weird. But whatever. That's a different subject.
Yeah. I'm with you. And then I was also, I enjoyed the TCU Colorado game because it, for a moment there, it seemed like Colorado was really going to go in there and do it to TCU again. But TCU took control of that game, hit the game winning touchdown pass on, I believe it was fourth down. Josh Hoover and Eric McAllister's receiver just kind of called sluggo at the line of scrimmage, and Hoover threw an absolutely beautiful ball. To go win that game. That was big for TCU. I enjoyed watching that one.
I didn't see any of Baylor, Kansas State, but that sure does look like it was a heck of a ball game.
Yeah, that was 1-7-5 team beating an eventual 5-7 team is really what that was.
I caught a little bit of the Michigan State-Nebraska game. Michigan State was atrocious on third down, like two for 14 on third down. You should not even be in a game. And then Aiden Childs, for all the hype he got, being a portal guy coming to Michigan State with his head coach, threw for a whopping 85 yards in that matchup. Like their offense has been really hard to watch. I really thought Nebraska would come in and chuck the ball around for 400 yards. They threw for just under 200. So again, I talked about Nebraska maybe being a 7 or 8 win team and Michigan State battling to be a bowl eligible team, and that certainly seems to have played out.
A couple of small things. Oregon State is not a good football team. I thought Maryland's quarterback was good enough at home to beat Washington, and boy, Washington's fourth quarter was unrelenting, and Washington found a way, which honestly surprised me.
Yeah, I was about to bring that up. I didn't see a snap of this game, so I'm not going to pretend to be able to break down how this happened, but holy cow. Maybe it was just Washington needed the extra couple hours to wake up coming from the West Coast. But, I mean, for Jed Fish and company to get up off the mat after losing that physical game to Ohio State, fly across the country, fall behind by 20 and win the game, that's worth 1.5 wins in my book.
James Franklin better pick up the phone and talk to Jed Fish and see how he can get his team ready to play.
How about, you know, last year's darling Northern Illinois, you know, who got Notre Dame last year? This year they haven't beaten an FBS team. That's unfortunate. Buffalo hangs on in OT, beats Eastern Michigan. Kind of a weird finish. Dan Mullen's team's undefeated. Haven't played much, to be honest, but they're undefeated. Kansas defense hung on and got them that win at the very end there. You know, Kansas, their offense, when they're clicking, they're really good. The defense hung on and got them a win. I don't know if you saw the end. The cornerback might have hooked the guy. And UCF receiver had the ball hit him in the hands in the end zone. But he didn't catch it, and no flag came out. So Kansas wins. Good talk. Duke playing at like 4 in the morning, you know, body time, East Coast time. They dominated in the fourth quarter and took that game from Cal.
Once again, according to James Franklin, that's impossible. Also, shout out to Bill Belichick for coming to college football and accomplishing what we thought would be impossible, and that is making Clemson's offense look terrifying. I think Clemson averaged about 48 yards per play through the first half and absolutely blew North Carolina out of the water. So North Carolina is making a serious run for the worst team in the Power Four, and there's plenty of Group of Five teams that would give this team the business as well.
Hey, they had Ludacris on campus. Football Scoop Podcast. I love college football. We're out, gentlemen. Y'all, we'll see you back here Tuesday. Tell your friends. We appreciate you watching.